Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
We've come to Book 9, the Book of Eternal Night, Canto 2. Last week we read through the whole of Canto 2. There was no break. And then we went back to the beginning and we had a look at the first about a page and a half. We read to the end of this image of how Savitri feels herself enveloped by this threatening darkness. And Sri Aurobindo says it's the sensation of the night falling, and there's no light anymore. The last friendly glimmer dies away, and there's a bullock. The hunters have tied a bullock in the forest, and it feels that darkness closing in around it. No empty night. It's a night that's full of danger and threat. That's where we stopped last time.
Which page?
Page 583. And we'll start reading at line 50. The thought that strives in the world was here unmade. And you could start, Ganga Lakshmi.
The journey in eternal night, the voice of the darkness.
But we won't start at the beginning. We'll start on page 583, line 50. Yeah.
The thought that strived in the world was here and made. Its effort is renounced to live and know, convinced at least that it had never been. It perished, all its dream of action done. The clotted cipher was its dark result. In the sun-serving stress of this stupendous note, mind could not think, breath could not breathe, the soul could not remember. Or feel itself, it seemed a low gulf of sterile emptiness, a zero oblivious of the sun, its close, an abnegation of the marker's joy, saved by no wide repose, no depth of peace. On all that claims here to be true and God, and conscious self, and the revealing world, and the creative rapture of the mind, and love and knowledge, and heart's delight, their fell. The immense refusal of the eternal.
Thank you. It seems to describe a kind of death, a kind of dying. First of all, the thought that keeps us going here in the world, that gets dissolved. It just gives up all its effort to live and know. And it even is convinced that it never really existed. It's ready to let everything go. And the death of that thought, the dissolution of that thought, results in this state which Savitri is feeling oppressing her now, this clotted cipher, a cipher in the sense of a zero, a nothing, and yet it's so dense and thick and dark. It reminds me of an experience which the mother has described. It's been published in the bulletin when she felt oppressed by an incredibly heavy, dense kind of darkness. And she said it's the mental inconscience. She said the inconscience of matter and the inconscience of life are not so dense and harsh and black and intense as that darkness. So Savitri feels as if smothered. There's a smothering pressure of this huge, powerful nothingness. Mind could not think. Breath could not breathe. The soul could not remember or feel itself. Perhaps it is the soul that seems a hollow gulf, a deep emptiness, sterile emptiness, a zero, that has forgotten the sum, all the many calculations and balancings and all the forms that it is now closing. All those are finished and gone and forgotten. This state is a denial, an abnegation of the joy of the Creator. When we turn away, or when the mind or the soul turns away from the joy of the Creator, it is in search of peace. But this abnegation now has no wide repose, no depth of peace. On all that claims here in our world to be truth and God and conscious self and the revealing word and the creative rapture of the mind and love and knowledge and heart's delight, on all the creative and worthwhile things in the manifestation, there fell the immense refusal of the eternal no.
Is it possible that from the standpoint of the grammar, I guess, it seemed this it could be the stupendous not?
Yes, that's possible.
Dylan Thomas, rail against the dying of the light.
Yes.
The whole feeling of that when I heard him actually say it, read it.
Yes.
Just feels like this.
Do not go silent. Oh, sorry.
Do not go silently.
Do not
into that good night.
Good night. So.
That was a rage against the death of his father. Rage.
Against the fading
the dying of the light.
You read it. At the top of the next page. Yes.
As disappears a golden lamp in gloom, born into distance from the eye's desire, into the shadows vanished Savitri. There was no course, no path, no end or goal. Visionless, she moved amid insensible gulfs, or drove through some great, black, unknowing waste, or whirled in a dumb eddy of meeting winds, assembled by the titan hands of chance. There was none with her in the dreadful vast. She saw no more the vague, tremendous God. Her eyes had lost their luminous Satyavan.
Thank you. I think it's clear. Anybody wants to ask anything?
80?
Line 80?
Or whirl in a damp
eddy. An eddy is like a whirlpool. So when winds of different directions come together, they create a whirlpool.
Shravan, if you were to say the symbolism of Savitri going into this land of death and she's accompanying Satyavan, and she's experiencing this loss of, well, so many things, and then, I mean, loss of perception of her soul, of her life, of her mind, of so many things. And now she has lost, her eyes had lost their luminous Satyavan. What is the symbolism of that? What is the, like, what is Satyavan and what's happened to him?
Well, he was the one she was following, no? So I think the implication is of two things. One is of total loneliness. She's absolutely alone. No? And the other, this sense of not knowing where they are going. No? There's no course, no path, no end, no goal. She can't see anything in this darkness. She gets whirled around. So it's the sense of being totally isolated and totally lost.
Is Satyavan a soul on a journey? Is it a disembodied being on its way to?
Yes, that's what it is. This is a soul, Satyavan. Of course, in the symbolism of the whole poem, Satyavan represents the human soul, and the soul of humanity and the soul of the earth. But here we can say that this is a soul of a human being that's been taken out of its body and is supposed now to be dissolved.
So you could see it in a cosmic sense, universal human experience, and as a one person.
Yes, yes. Yeah.
In this case, Satyavan be leading, right?
Yes, Satyavan was
behind, so it's like the luminous part I'm thinking about. Because it's in a complete darkness, so she could only see the soul of Satyavan moving forward. So I mean, it was like a luminous thing, a bright thing for her, but now it's gone.
Yes, complete darkness. And she herself has disappeared, no? She was also a shining light. She's like a golden lamp, but it's as if she's been carried away into the, and this darkness is so thick. Marie, you would read?
Yet not for this her spirit filled, but held more deeply than the bounded senses can, which grasp externally and find to lose its object love. So when on earth they lived, she had felt him straining through the glades as seen in her. Its clefts her being's crevices, opening their secrets to his search and joy. Because the jealous sweetness in her heart, whatever happy space his cherished feet preferred, much be at once her soul embracing his body, fashioning dumbly to his tread. But now the silent gulf between them came, and to ever small loneliness she fell, even from herself, cast out and love and love.
Thank you. So just because she can't see Satyavan anymore, it doesn't mean that she's lost contact with him. Her spirit holds on more deeply to him than the senses can, our limited senses. They hold things externally, they look for things and they lose them. No? So her spirit holds on more strongly to its object, loved, onto the soul of Satyavan. And Sri Aurobindo brings in this beautiful contrast, so beautiful. So he had described in Canto 1 of Book 7, when she was at home and Satyavan was in the forest, she was with him, feeling what he was doing, perceiving what he was doing, holding on to him, and even he was aware of her presence. So he reminds us of that, when on earth they lived. She had felt him straying through the glades of the forest as he went about his work. And those glades, those openings in the trees where the sun comes through, these were seen in her. And the openings, the clefts in the forest were vistas. A vista is an opening where you can see a distance, no? Within herself, opening up their secrets to Satyavan's search and joy. And this she was holding on to and sharing this experience with him because her heart is jealous. She wants to share this sweetness, no? And whatever space his cherished feet preferred, wherever he wanted to go, must be her soul embracing his body. It must be happening in her. She is feeling the delight of his tread, passioning dumbly to his tread. That was the experience she had then. But now, there's a division, a silent gulf comes between them. And to abysmal loneliness she fell. She's even cast out from herself and far away from this love which is her central reality. So, Danya, what do you read?
Long all since long it seems, one's love's time is measured by the cold of a soul's day. In an unreal darkness, empty and bare, she traveled treading in the course of life, lost in the blindness of extinguished souls, solitary in the anguish of the void. She lived in spite of death, she conquered still. In vain her ocean's being was oppressed. A heavy, long monotony of pain, tardily of its fierce self-tortured triumph. At first, a faint, inextinguishable gleam, pale but immortal flicker in the gloom, as if a memory came to speak dead, a memory that wished to live again. Dissolve from minds in nature's metal sleep.
Let's pause there. So this seems to go on for a long time, even though Sri Aurobindo describes it in only one sentence. But he says, long hours. Since long it seems when sluggish time is measured by the throbs of the soul's pain. Time seems to move very, very slowly, like a slug, you know, like a snail without a shell, a slug. Sluggish, very slowly. Even the darkness is unreal, an unreal darkness. Empty, drear, full of suffering, really. She travels on. It's as if she's treading on the corpse of life. All life is dead. This whole realm that she's in seems to be consist of a blindness of extinguished souls. The light of the living soul has been put out. But she continues. She's all alone in this anguish of the soul, but she goes on living. Her soul is not extinguished. She is able to conquer that terrible state. In vain her puissant being was oppressed. There's all this pressure on her, but it doesn't destroy her. And this state that she's in, this heavy, long monotony of pain. Shobindo says tardily, after a long time, after too long, her state got tired of itself. It wished to change. It wished to escape from this long, fierce self-torture. So a light returns. At first, just a faint gleam. But it's an inextinguishable gleam. It can't be put out. It's pale, but it's immortal. It's flickering there in the darkness. And that little bit of light, it's like a memory coming back to these spirits that are dead. A memory that wished to live again. It's a kind of little echo of the very, very beginning of the poem. Do you remember? Everything's in complete darkness right at the beginning.
Yeah.
At first it's not even a light, it's just a little movement. Mother, in her explanation, says it's like the first movement of the beginning of aspiration. And in the wake of that little movement, in all that darkness, something wakes up, as if a soul long dead were moved to live. And it tries to remember. It can't remember. But somehow there's a response to that little movement. And finally the light comes.
It seems to me that this is a parallel.
It's a good hint, isn't it?
It is a very good
hint. Yes. Yes.
One sees it, you know? One sees it in oneself.
Yes.
Let go and make room for some other experience.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. You think you're being oppressed. No, but it might be self-torture. Yes.
I want to tell something about the voice of the mother after Shobindo going when he's starting entretien in ashram. Voice is very, very deep and so far from the student, nearer, for me, and a very deep voice, but suffer inside. But after 12 years, when in 1962 puts light in the attention, the voice starting very close, for example, from Saprem, but Saprem is the scribe of the mother, and mother voice changed totally, but slowly. 1959 is a little change, but slowly, slowly, slowly. And suddenly, it's incredible. Alors, I just voice, comparison of voice.
You know, she has said something very interesting to Mona Sarkar about her voice. You have read that?
Yeah.
You're not going to tell us.
Hmm?
You're not going to tell us.
I think you should take the trouble to find that book. I think it's called Blessings of the Grace. And read in Mother's own words what she says. I would really hesitate to try to paraphrase it. Thank you. So there's this memory, that wish to live again, even though it's been dissolved from mind. We think of my memories being held in the mind, but this is a different kind of memory that has been dissolved from mind by this natal sleep of nature. Nature, when it goes back to its primal sleep before it's born, even. Larry.
It wandered like a lost ray of the moon, revealing to the night a soul of dread, serpentine in the gleam the darkness lulled, its black hoods jeweled with the mystic glow, its dull sleek folds shrank back and coiled and slid, as though they felt all like a cruel pain and suffered from the pale approach of hope. Night felt a sail, her heavy somber rain, the splendor of some bright eternity threatened with this faint beam of wandering truth, her empire of the everlasting night. Implacable in her intolerant strength, and confident that she alone was true, she strove to stifle the frail, dangerous ray, aware of an all-negating immensity. She reared her giant head of nothingness, her mouth of darkness swallowing all that is. She saw in herself the tenebrous absolute.
Thank you. In the first line, it is that little light, not that gleam, inextinguishable gleam. It wandered like a lost ray of the moon.
And what does the it refer to?
The gleam, the little light, which is Savitri returning to herself. So this little light wandering like a lost ray of the moon. It's such a tiny, pale light. But wherever there's some light, I think we spoke about it last week, you can see. So this light revealed to the night, to the darkness, her soul, the soul of darkness. And that's, we can see this black serpent in the dark with its many coils, its many hoods also, like the hoods of cobras, jeweled with that mystic glow, that light is reflected on those cobra hoods and these coils shrink back as though they felt all light, a cruel pain. They suffer because of this faint little approach of hope. Night feels attacked. She feels her rule, her reign of darkness is being attacked because this faint beam of wandering truth represents the splendor of some bright eternity. It's a threat to the darkness. No? It threatens her empire of everlasting nothingness. So the night feels strong, implacable in her intolerant strength, confident that she alone was true. She tries to stifle this faint, frail ray. It's a terrible danger to her, but she is aware of some vast, all-negating immensity, that eternal no. So like a great serpent, she rears up her giant head of nothingness. Her mouth of darkness swallows everything that is. Night sees in herself the absolute of darkness, the tenebrous absolute. She feels all her power and strength, and she's going to stifle this tiny, weak little ray of light.
Tenebrous
means full of shadows. I mean, that's what it means in English, but I think in French it means dark. No,
no, noir.
Yes, black. You will read.
But still, the light prevailed, and still it grew. And suddenly, to her lost self awoke. Her limbs refused the cold embrace of death. Her heartbeats triumphed in the grasp of pain. Her soul persisted, claiming for its joy. The soul of the beloved now seemed no more. Before her, in the stillness of the world, once more she heard the treading of a god. And out of the dumb darkness, Satyavan, her husband, grew into a luminous shade. Then a sound pealed through that dead monstrous wail, vast like the surge in a tired swimmer's ears, shattering a fatal iron-hearted roar. Death mission to the night is calm.
Thank you, thank you. So Savitri survives. Sri Aurobindo and the mother have spoken of this as a possibility for human beings who are developed enough in the psychic, in the soul. They mention it as one of the ways of losing the fear of death, that it is possible to go into this death state where everything gets dissolved except the soul itself. And then, like Savitri, everything can come back. And then you will never fear leaving your having to leave your body. There are other ways of losing the fear of death. But this is one of them. And this is something that has been practiced by yogis. Well, because of that that experience that Savitri had at the end of canto six of book seven, it was as if she was just going to be annulled, as if she was going to cease to exist. She was absolutely ready for that. Here she can pass through this experience and come out the other side. But death is going to do his best to discourage her. Treading, walking, she can hear as if the footsteps of the god. It's as if she doesn't see him at first. She hears his feet. So what does he say? Tuan, you can read.
This is my silent, dark immensity. This is the home of everlasting life. This is the secrecy of nothingness, encompassing the infinity of life desire. Hast thou beheld thy source, O transient heart, and known from what the dream thou art was made, in this stark sincerity of mute emptiness, hopest thou still always to lost and love, the woman calls it not. Her spirit refused the voice of night that knew and death that thought. In her beginningless infinity, through her soul's reaches, unconfined she saw the undying fountains of her life. She knew herself eternal without birth.
Thank you. Shall we just go on?
Yeah. I just love this line. She refused the voice of night that knew and death that thought.
This is
her first realization that she is beginningless infinity.
No, she had that realization. She's had all these realizations before in the book of yoga. But now it's as if everything has, these realizations have to be put into practice. You know? They're being challenged.
Okay.
But for her, it's somehow automatic because she knows this. You know? Her spirit refuses all these things, this conscious night which is threatening her, this thought of death with all that it's trying.
She knows it now.
No, she did. I mean, she had, that's one of the realizations that she had, that she was beginning.
Even when in the darkness she knew
it. I don't know about that, but she was carrying this previous experience with her, no?
Yeah.
And now it's come up in the face of this challenge. She can remember her beginningless infinity. It all goes back to book 7, canto 6. Yeah. But you mean when why she was able to suffer all that? She's gone through this process, no? Through the darkness, through the process of dying. No? But she lived in spite of death.
But this says beginningless infinity. So, I don't know, that word, beginningless.
She knew her. Yes, I think Sri Aurobindo shows us this passage. No, you might think that because Savitri has realized her oneness, all this wouldn't be a challenge to her. But I think for the purposes of what he wants to share with us, Sri Aurobindo has shown us what we might have to face when we leave the body. No? But it's true for all of us.
But even when we're powerless, we feel absolutely powerless in the dark. I mean, and the light seems to be floating around there somewhere. And that is such a change to take the light instead of the dark, as we've been doing in the dark all this time.
Yes. But that darkness disappeared, no? I mean, that light disappeared for some time. And she went through all this experience of solitariness and all the rest of it. But there was something in her which was inextinguishable and which goes through and remembers and grows stronger and stronger. And when death challenges her and says, look, have you seen what you are? You, all your hopes and everything, it's just born out of this darkness, it's nothing. Then she knows that's not true.
But if we take this down to our level,
yes,
that's life. That life is life.
You have life because you have spirit, soul and spirit. The life itself can pass out of you, go somewhere else. It's the soul and the spirit that are eternal.
The line that I don't quite understand, she knew herself eternal without birth.
Hmm. So like the Supreme, she is unborn. She's always been there. Like us too, actually. It's only we have forgotten it. We've agreed to forget it. But in our true essential individuality, we too are eternal without birth. And that would be a very, very important realization to have.
For me, it's your question, and this also came to me, that the infinity you can experience also more in the mental perception or in another level, but the beginningless infinity and the eternal without birth, that is something on all levels. That is another level. It goes together. The beginningless becomes another meaning to the infinity.
Anyway, it's all amazingly profound, isn't it?
Mm. Could you elaborate on that line that Krishna mentions about the voice of night at noon and death at thought?
Yes. These. Actually, these are contradictions, aren't they? Night that is conscious. Death that thinks. So it's a fake of some kind. It can't be. This is not right. And her spirit refuses to believe in that. I could interpret it like that. Mm-hmm. This can't be real.
There's an expression, pulling death is pulling, it doesn't say death, it's pulling the wall
over
her.
Our eyes. And she's not going to let that happen. Yeah. No, there's something in her that says, no, nonsense.
Yeah.
I can look, I can see, I can gaze through all the vast expanse of my soul and know that I am eternal. Without birth, infinite, without beginning. But this does not discourage him. He's still going to go on for some time. Shall we go on further? Tone, sorry.
But still opposing her with endless night, death, dire wrath, inflicted on her eyes, the immortal calm of his tremendous gaze. Although thou hast survived the unborn void, which never shall forgive, while time endures, the primal violence that fashioned thought, forcing the immobile past to suffer and live, the sorrowful victory only hast thou won to live for a little without Saturn. What shall the ancient goddess give to thee? Who helps thy heartbeats? Only she prolongs the nothing dream existence and delays with the labor of living thy eternal sleep.
Thank you. So Savitri is aware of herself as eternal without birth. Death shows her something else, this unborn void, this eternal, infinite emptiness, which is also conscious. He says it will never forgive as long as time endures, as long as there's a manifestation. It will not forgive this original violence that brought thought into existence. There was this unmoving, vast emptiness. it has been forced to live and to suffer and to think. And it won't forgive that. It wants to stifle and destroy that. So you have managed to pass through and you've survived all that, but for what? No? You've only won this sorrowful victory that you can go back to earth and live for a little longer without Satyavan. And he recognizes, he's already recognized before, I think, that there's a power, a dread goddess who is helping, supporting Savitri. And here he says, what can she give to you? She's helping you to remain alive. But all she's doing is to prolong, to extend this illusory existence, this nothingness of dreamed existence. And she's just delaying for a little while your eternal sleep. You're going to have to go on with the labor of living. That's all she's giving to you. Death will bring you peace and release and dissolution.
Can you unpack this
sentence? Oh, I thought I just had. Sorry.
This is the primal violence that fashioned thought.
Yes. So he seems to be referring to a state when there was no manifestation, when there was no conscious thought, there was no evolution, there was no life. And from that point of view, he says, from the point of view of that unborn, eternal emptiness, all this business of a creation, a universe, with living and conscious beings in it, it's a terrible intrusion, a primal violence. A real upset, a disturbance. And there's something in that unborn void which goes on resenting that and trying to destroy it, saying no to it, the eternal no.
My mind says that's the Big Bang, the violence.
Yes, maybe it was a Big Bang like that, the primal violence. Yeah.
Also do this word forgive to explain more. It's not so clear for me.
It's that unborn void, no? Mm-hmm. Which will never forgive. As long as time endures, as long as there is a manifestation, that emptiness, that nothingness, which does not want manifestation, it will not forgive it. Again, we have a suggestion of that on the very first page of the poem. He speaks about the mind of night, no? And it's lying there, the huge foreboding mind of light. And it's there, line 11, between the first and the last nothingness. And it remembers womb of darkness from which it has emerged. And it wants to go back. It turns away from the insoluble mystery of birth and the tardy process of mortality. It longs to reach its end in vacant naught. You can say it's the death wish. There's something that finds living just too difficult. Existence is too difficult. Let me be dissolved again back into the original nothingness. We carry this in us. Yes, it is. But he says you've won a kind of victory, you've survived, but it's not much of a victory, is it? You can live, but you can only live without Satyavan. Yes, that she has survived, no? This death process. She's come out the other side. Yeah.
Well,
also telling it, only she, the goddess, no?
Mm.
Prolongs a nothing dreamed existence. So he, what do you say, he connects that the goddess is only supporting what he thinks.
No. She's helping you. This ancient goddess is helping your heartbeats. She's helped you to survive what most people wouldn't survive. Mm? But what is she giving you? She's only extending this illusory existence of living on the earth, no? And she's just, I would give you your eternal sleep, I would give you that rest, but she's prolonging the process, delaying it. Mm? That's all that's happening. This is a sorrowful victory. It's really not much of a victory, he thinks. Now he's going to speak about his view of human beings. That's another page and a bit. Perhaps we can stop there for today. It's a little early, but I think it was really quite enough.
Yes.
Before we start on a different theme, we can do that next week.
Woman first a fountain in the abyss, daring to journey through the eternal night. Armored with light, she advanced her foot to plunge into the great and shoeless vacant. Heard not.